Welcome to Main Street, somewhere in America. The wind sweeps across the plains and moans on its way through what was once a thriving town. Now the storefronts are empty. The paint is peeled. Crabgrass grows from the sidewalks, and that screen door on what used to be a popular ice cream parlor opens and slams as ghosts move in and out. A stray dog with a bas-relief ribcage paws at the fast food bag some motorist flung out the window as he sped through days ago. Other than that canine, there is nothing and no one. No matter the original name, this town and hundreds of similar towns have been rechristened. Their new name is Desolation. I just finished a 7,000-mile drive across America. This time, I wasn't in such a big hurry. I had some time to look around. And the things I saw. Come on, take a ride with me.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hands off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
7,000 miles doesn't mean much over the course of a year. To an over-the-road trucker, it's a blip. But in a span of 10, 12 days, 7,000 miles is a lot of road, a lot of gas, hotel rooms, a lot of continental breakfasts, some fantastic dinners, and a few awful ones. Of course, the alternative is flying. How ironic that when you're closest to heaven, you're in hell. Commercial flying was shitty enough before the pandemic. Body scans, gropes, wandings, all performed by people who cannot be fired, many of whom are on power trips. Now, with flight crews barking orders about mask placement, flying is no longer about travel. It's about taking shit from strangers and paying them for the experience. What you lose in time and money by driving, you more than make up in fun and enlightenment. It's a big country, but the more you drive it, the smaller it gets, and you realize that it's not nearly as fucked up as politicians and the media would have you believe. Though it is in trouble, there's a lot of America that still is great. As a kid, my family didn't travel a lot. I got my wanderlust filled vicariously through the usual sources, books, movies, TV, and the neighbors. They were very nice people, quiet and trustworthy. You could not ask for better. And they traveled a lot to exotic locations. One year it may have been the Alps, the year after Machu Picchu, that kind of thing. And so every year there was a dinner invitation, and then, right after dessert, the lights would dim, the dad would fire up the carousel projector, and the Kodachromes would take us to faraway places. The guy was a very skilled photographer. He favored Pentax cameras and had all the gear, strobe lights and battery packs and so on. His pictures were near National Geo caliber. So good I sometimes wondered if he bought them at the tourist shops. But his narration, holy shit, it was like homework. One factoid after another. I guess he had a photographic memory. He would drone on. And this is the Great Pyramid at Giza, comprised of 2.3 million blocks. Each individual stone weighs more than 35 full-size automobiles. The vertical height is 454 feet and it covers over 13 acres at the base. It was built as a tomb for the 4th dynasty pharaoh, Khufu. I never did any drugs, but at those shows, I wondered if LSD might be worth a try. It was during those interminable slideshows that I learned how not to tell a story. That same academic mindset is what helps kids learn to hate history and enables talentless politicians to blow elections. Nobody gives a damn about dates or numbers when it comes to crafting a narrative. Early in my career, I attended this huge advertising luncheon in New York at the Waldorf Astoria. By the way, what's the difference between a lunch and a luncheon? Damned if I know. The star speaker was Ted Turner, back in the days when they called him Captain Outrageous. He was racing in America's Cup and banging Jane Fonda and presiding over the enterprise he had built, CNN. He also appeared to be shit-faced drunk and gave a rambling, incoherent talk. His people said that he was dehydrated, but he sure came off as very, very wet. After Ted, the next guy at the podium was the top marketing dude at Anheuser-Busch when it was still an American company. They really did some clever advertising and had an obscene share of the beer market. So this guy starts talking about how great Budweiser is and they're dominating the suds business, and then he said something that really grabbed me. He said that if he told everyone how many millions of barrels or billions of bottles or cans of beer they sold each year, it probably wouldn't have much of an impact. So instead, he said, "How about if I told you that if we poured all the beer we sell over Niagara Falls, it would take 2 days for it to run dry? Or that we could fill an empty Yankee Stadium 23 times, or make a chain of beer kegs that would go from this ballroom to the moon and loop all the way back?" I don't know if I remembered all those things precisely, but does it matter? Mr. Budweiser knew how to tell a story, and all decimals, fractions, and units do to stories is ruin them. So once again, for the third time in less than 2 years, I got the fun wagon prepped for a long haul. Fresh 10,000-mile synthetic oil, new wiper blades, new cabin and engine air filters, the tire rotation, topped off the spare, bought a radar detector, hooked up the CB, and headed east. And we didn't get too far until a funny thing happened.
The Delta variant.
It had been creeping around the dark corners of the zeitgeist for a while, but suddenly, the media and government turned the volume knobs up to 11. It was back to mask up, social distance, and stay home. Which was the same circumstances of previous cross-country trips. You can hear about those in episodes 286, 88, 89, and 295 at thatlarryshow.com. But this time, unlike those other trips under lockdown, not so many people seem to be getting the message. I mean, last year the roads were deserted. Hotels were vacant, and the rates were crazy cheap. It was eerie and very different. Like seeing America after a neutron bomb. Everything was still there except the people. This time, first stop was Flagstaff, Arizona, where we stayed overnight. It seemed Arizonans weren't all that concerned about the Delta. Oh, but New Mexico, they were in full panic mode. By the way, leftist states, and New Mexico is one, they have no idea how to do road construction. Instead of routing traffic around construction, they just stop the road cold for an hour or more while thousands of cars sit there idling while they play with the backhoes and steamrollers. Incredible inefficiency. It was the same story in Camavinga, up in the Northeast. Oklahoma and Texas, well, they do road work and traffic keeps on moving. It ain't rocket science. Well, it is to commies. A couple of things became very apparent on this trip because we had a little more time to stop and stare at various places. And now it seems almost every American town is really two towns. The one where people live and shop and work, and the original one, and that one is a ghost town. Ghost towns that were not built as Halloween attractions, they were created by the corporatization of America. The first main street, where foot traffic was once teeming, is now deserted. The buildings are mostly brick, one or two stories. The cornerstones and keystones display dates from maybe the late 1800s into the early 20th century. Some of those buildings are beautiful, or at least ornate. They may have been restaurants or offices, butcher shops, soda fountains, saloons, opera houses, drugstores, but they're all empty. And the given town will try to dress the place up, hang flower baskets or flags from the retro lampposts, things like that. Make it some kind of a tourist attraction, call it Old Town, fill in the blank. But it doesn't work. A few of the storefronts may be occupied, maybe by boutiques or coffee joints. And when you walk inside, there's usually a lazy dog sprawled on the floor, and the proprietor looks at you with desperation because you're the only thing on two legs that's visited in a week. You feel really bad and look around for something to buy that you actually might need, but it's always crap like sequined Hello Kitty sweaters or pottery. No sale, thanks for stopping in, y'all come back anytime. It's kind of depressing. One of the saddest examples is a little place in Arkansas called Van Buren. You can see that at one time, it had a heartbeat. Van Buren has actually attempted to capitalize on the Twilight Zone vibe, and they're calling it a ghost town. One of the storefronts is occupied by a ghost hunter. Says so, in a fancy font decal, right on the front window, the Arkansas Ghost Hunters of Crawford County. Paranormal investigations. The logo is a graveyard. There are a couple of Frankenstein-style lab specimen jars in the window, one with a pickled head, the other with a brain. Yeah, they look as fake as they sound. We were the only people on that street in midday. There was no one else. No other car drove by. We stopped in an antique store. The only sound inside was the tick of a grandfather clock. I thought the place was empty until a voice said,
"Welcome."
I could see no one. Then the voice said,
"I'm down here."
An older guy with white hair sat in a low chair behind a counter. He was very chatty. We talked for a while, and he suggested we try a lunch at the town's five-star Italian restaurant. He actually said something like,
"The finest, freshest pasta east of the Rockies,"
or some such catchphrase. When we walked a few blocks to have a look, it was closed. We went into another store. Would it sell? Stuff I could not be remotely interested in. Tea sets and nightlights and hand-stitched wall hangings with corny inspirational sayings on them. Samplers, I think grannies called them. The original memes. My wife and daughter went to look around, but for the 15 seconds I was in there, the hair stood up on the back of my neck. The town, or at least the very few merchants in the town, have a recorded loop that plays through speakers constantly, urging visitors to check out all the wonders of Van Buren. The recording used the exact phrase about the Italian restaurant that the old dude in the antique store had plugged. Verbatim. Had he been real or an animatron? I looked down a side street and spotted a store called Rockabilly Music. Thought I'd have a look inside, but by the time I was 10 yards from the door, I changed my mind. It just looked sad. Oddly, in all these towns where prosperous businesses vanished long ago, the most common tenants are now attorneys. That says a hell of a lot about America. Why are there so many attorneys, even in small towns? Maybe because we're so strangled by laws and regulations and litigation and government. Invariably, a mile or two from the retro abandoned Main Street is the new Main Street, and they are all identical and hideous. There's always a Walmart, a Taco Bell, a Bed Bath & Beyond, AutoZone, O'Reilly's, Walgreens, Starbucks, the exact chain outfits stamped out like steel washers. But what they don't know is, or maybe they do, those new centers of commerce will soon be ghost towns as well. Amazon is on track to surpass Walmart as the world's largest retailer by the end of the year. Surprising that hasn't happened already. People like the convenience of mouse clicking as opposed to shopping in person and fighting for parking and waiting at check stands. Layer that with being trained for almost 2 years to shop Amazon because of a lockdown, and most brick-and-mortar retail is doomed. But those glass boxes, they won't look quaint like old brick buildings with bay windows and cupolas and spires and mansard roofs. Glass boxes will just look like the utilitarian shit that they are, designed and built to facilitate the exchange of stuff for money, and fuck the aesthetics. Nobody at Walmart or Costco cares about mood lighting as they load a pallet of Scott 1000 asswipe into the F-150. Once those glass boxes are empty, they quickly will be vandalized. And then America will truly be a ghost nation, as I predicted in episode 286. By the way, you can view images of the things I've been talking about at thatlarryshow.com. But hang on, it's not all gloom. You can find some wonderful people and mighty uplifting things in, say, Catoosa, Oklahoma. It's just outside of Tulsa and home of one of Route 66 Marvel's, the famed Blue Whale. A guy named Hugh Davis built it in the 1970s. It's pretty damn big, might be, I don't know, 70, 80 feet long, made of concrete and steel. It sits in a pond, and its fins are actually slides, if you want to take a swim. It's got a good-sized platform in the midsection you can fish off of. It's bigger than the whale at Disneyland, and this one doesn't cost you $150 to see it. There's no admission charge. Now here's the kicker. The guy built it as an anniversary gift for his wife. If only someone had been rolling video for the presentation of that gift. Can you imagine? One evening, Hugh comes home from the office and tells his wife he wants to take her for a ride and show her something special. Of course, she knows it's their anniversary. She probably puts on some glad rags and puffs up her beehive hairdo. He gallantly opens the passenger door on the Ford LTD Bro-Am. She settles into the crushed velour seats. She's antsy with excitement. Her head holds visions of maybe dinner at the best restaurant in Tulsa. Candlelight, fine wine, violins. Maybe between the entree and dessert, her handsome husband will slide a small box across the table. What will be in it? A diamond bracelet? Maybe it'll be an envelope with air tickets to Paris for a fabulous European vacation. Her Buick's getting pretty tired. She's always wanted a Cadillac Coupe de Ville. Could that be his gift to her? She's giddy with anticipation. As they near the old fishing hole, Hugh signals right and turns into the dirt lot. It's just dusk. Now she's certain it will be the Cadillac. They exit the car. Then she notices some massive thing under a sheet in the water. A couple of guys on shore yank ropes and expose the blue whale. Hugh beams and says, "Happy anniversary, darling!"
"You asshole!"
Oh! There's no record of how the big unveiling went. And how the hell it was kept a secret during months of construction, well, that's also a mystery. Hugh passed away in 1990 and his wife followed him 10 years after. Then the whale began to crumble, but the fine people of Catoosa got together and restored it to new condition, and there it sits today. There are picnic benches, a little lighthouse, and a tiny shop with a ceiling so low you have to stoop while inside. There, the lovely Linda sells all kinds of souvenirs associated with the blue whale and dispenses fascinating tales about it. Outside, toddlers play and fish on it. Parents sit in the shade and watch them. It's nice. Still no admission charges, no velvet ropes, no signs with codes of conduct. It's doubtful Kedusa has changed a whole lot since its most famous and largest resident appeared. It's a pretty little town, and as I drove through, I didn't see a single bail bondsman, or check cashing joint, or splash of graffiti, or razor wire fencing, or needle exchange, or any of the other horrific things that stamp other American towns as 21st century shitholes. Well, look at this. Just when we get started, it's almost time to go. But there were a whole lot more stops on this road trip, places you may have heard of and some very obscure. So come on back next week and ride shotgun with me down the back roads and byways. Thanks for listening. If you want to write, it's thatlarryshow@gmail.com. If you want to look at the sites I just talked about, slide over to thatlarryshow.com. If you like what you heard and want to help me keep the tank full, click the Patreon or PayPal button and join the Take No Shit Dojo. There are still some of those retro motel key fobs available. You can see them and get them at the homepage. Only 10 bucks. They look right, feel right, won't get lost in your bag, and they tell the world you're one of us. America-loving, commie-hating road warriors. Quick news flash. My pal Darren O'Neill of the Random Thoughts and Grumpy Old Ben's podcast has invited me to team up with him for a shiny new show, Planet Rage. Oh, good God. It almost sounds like too much fun. I'll be wearing body armor and brass knuckles. At 6'6", Darren will probably be okay in street clothes. We don't have a firm start date yet, but you can find it at planetrage.show. Follow this show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Mastodon. You'll find links to all those at thatlarryshow.com. I'll see you next Wednesday for more adventures on the road. And until that time, take no shit.